they make the duplicate content, right? The white hats, they're like, I make a valid site, and maybe I have it in a different country, maybe it's .uk, and I don't want to be penalized for duplicate content, or I have a printable version of an article, and I don't want that to be viewed as duplicate content. So it's really funny, whenever someone asks me about duplicate content, I can pretty much assume that they're a white hat. It's kind of a nice little feature. So most of the time, you do not need to worry, right? Like, search engines go out of their way to try to figure out what is the duplicate content, how do we remove it without causing any problems whatsoever. People very, very rarely get penalized for duplicate content. Most of the time, if we detect one page and then another page being duplicate, we'll just say, okay, this page we won't show, we'll show this page instead. And if you're the person who originally wrote the content, suppose you're writing an article or something like that, it's very smart to embed a link to the original location of that article. And then if that ever gets scraped or copied or syndicated or whatever, that duplicate article will link to your original article. That pretty much guarantees that you, the original owner, the original person who wrote that article, will have the most page rank. And that, in turn, pretty much guarantees that you, the original owner, will show up first. Now, that doesn't handle every case, right? It is possible for there to be duplicate content. So we just introduced something about a few weeks ago called the canonical link tag. And the idea is there are so many big sites that have canonical duplicate content on their own site. Like, has anybody ever run into having www.macOS.com and non-www.macOS.com, right? And sometimes you tell the developers, put a 301 from the www version to the non-www version, and they don't do it, and you end up with like 18 copies. Or the HTTP version of the site and the HTTPS secure version of the site, sometimes those both show up. Sometimes you just have the same content, you know, sorted by ascending price and descending price. So we introduced a new tag. It's called the canonical link tag. And it's very simple. In an HTML page, you have an element in the head, and that element basically says the canonical version of this page is the preferred version of this page, the pretty version, the clean version of this URL is right here. So for example, maybe you want all the sort prices to be increasing in price. You can say, okay, the canonical version of this page is sort equals ascending, something like that. And it's very, very simple. We treat it just like a 301, pretty much. So you can't go across domains. That was one question. Some people were like, well, what about hijacking? Can't I say that, you know, if I hack into this guy's site right here, maybe the canonical version is my black hat site? In order to prevent that from being an issue, we said, no, you can only do the canonical tag within your own site. So that's the automatic safety valve that sort of prevents against any kind of hijacking. Now, is it possible to have problems? It is. In fact, anybody here have an IBM laptop? Okay. So IBM shot themselves in the foot with the canonical link tag. They were, whenever you visit the homepage, they did a redirect, and they also set the canonical link tag to be a page that was like a 404 and had never been crawled by Google. Yeah, that's not good. That's not good. So for a couple days, we were like, IBM.com ? null, you know, or something like that. So don't just jump into this. Don't just say, yeah, I'm going to throw canonical on every single page tonight in a 4 a.m. binge where I've had 6 cups of coffee and I'm jittering like this. Oh, it's going to be so much fun. Right? Take a little bit of time. Plan out how you're going to do the canonical tag. Make sure that it makes sense. There's time. It's not an emergency. But it's a really great way to solve any duplicate content problems. Now, if your duplicate content problem is an external person, someone who has scraped you, a spammer, something like that, there's two things you can do. If they're a legitimate company, do a Digital Millennium Copyright Act request. It's also called a DMCA request. So, for example, I write on my blog, I throw out blog posts. There's a site in Google News who will take my blog posts and publish them as an article without my permission. I'm like, dude, that's really uncool. Stop doing that. And I don't really care that much, but if I did, I'd file a DMCA request, and Google would take those pages out of the index. Now, if they're a true spammer, right, if it's casinos-viagra-cialis-onlinegambling.info/us.biz, whatever, and they're really scraping you and there's nothing good on there at all, do a spam report, because we do love to get those. And when we pull on that thread, we can sometimes find the entire spam network. So that's the short answer. Duplicate content, you normally don't need to worry. If you are interested, you're more than welcome to use the canonical link tag. It works very well. Take your time, but it's just like a little 301 permanent redirect on your site. And if you see somebody scraping you or who is a spammer, either do a DMCA request or do a spam report. And now I've almost forgotten what the second question was.
About the JavaScript test you guys did with Ajax and SERPs where we lost all our referring data.
Yeah. So that was really funny. I think... Yeah, that was a who, you know? So, it's really funny. The team there, the GWS team, we run our own web server. It's called the Google Web Server. So it's not Apache, it's not IIS, it's custom code that we've written. And we've written it just to return search results and return it really, really fast. All they really think about, that team, is speed. How do we get the search results to users as fast as humanly possible? Because if we can cut 500 milliseconds, half a second, off of the response time on a search, you would be amazed how much more people search and how much more they come back to Google versus other search engines. So there's an entire team at Google, and all they think about is making things faster. Well, they found out something interesting. Doing a search means I go to this page, and then I do another search, and now I leave Google and I go off to another web result. It turns out that can be made a lot faster with JavaScript. So they were experimenting with something called JavaScript Enhanced Search Results, JESR, J-E-S-R. And the idea is pretty simple. Suppose you do a search for flowers. Instead of going off and doing a whole new request for an entirely new page, as you're typing flowers, we can sort of think, okay, what are they going to search for? We can do a query to the back end, and we can fold in new search results directly there on the page. So you don't leave Google.com at all. You are still on Google.com. You've searched for flowers, and using JavaScript, Ajax, we've pulled in the search results. Now you click on one of those search results, and what happens? You go to your website, ftd.com or whatever, but it looks like you're coming from google.com. You don't have that refer anymore. Well, believe it or not, the team hadn't thought about refers, right? Because they care about making things really, really fast. And they'd been testing it, and they were like, yes, it's really, really fast, but they hadn't looked at the refer aspect a while ago. So they basically stopped. There were a bunch of people at Google who shouted, like the Google Analytics team, right? There were a bunch of people who shouted outside of Google, and so the team has paused that until we can try to find a way to preserve refers. And we do not want to go forward, I do not want to go forward without having refers. Because that's important. You guys need to have analytics, you need to have that in your search logs. And there was one myth where people were like, oh, only Google Analytics will have the info, and then they'll sell it back to us or whatever. No, no. This team was just trying to make the search results as fast as possible. They succeeded, they didn't think about refers. And it's really tricky because how do you set the referrer from JavaScript? If there are a way to do that, boom, you'd be done. So it's going to take a little bit of time. We still want to be really fast, but we don't want to break referrers. And so the team there is thinking about all the different ways you can do it. There might be ways that you can incorporate it into browsers, you know, like pass along the referrer, everything after the hash mark. And there might be ways you can incorporate something into HTML5. So they're still actively looking at that. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to hit people over the head if they try to roll it out more broadly without having refers.
How come you guys couldn't come out and just say that a little more? You know, there were so many rumors and theories coming out during that time. Why don't you guys be a bit more open when you're doing those tests?
That's good feedback.
Moving a site. We've talked 301s, 302s. What's the best way to go about moving a site these days, or a sub-site?
Okay. Do you want to know about moving to a new IP address or moving to a new domain name?
Both.
All right, here we go. IP address is easier, so let's do that first. Wow, I need three hands. So you have an old site at an old IP address. You bring up the same site at the new IP address, right? And the whole idea of that is no matter which IP address you go to, you'll still get the exact same site. So you want to mirror or duplicate it across IP addresses. Before you even do that, there's something in DNS, the domain name system. Whenever I type in google.com or webmasterworld.com or pubcon.com, there's a domain name resolver that says, okay, the IP address for pubcon.com is right here. And normally you say, okay, that's cached for, say, 24 hours. So if I search for pubcon.com again, I'll go straight to that IP address. I don't recheck for another 24 hours. There's a setting called TTL, which stands for time to live. So you can set your DNS TTL, or time to live, to like 5 minutes. And if you do that, then every 5 minutes, if you type in pubcon.com, it'll just recheck for the new IP address. So step one, set your DNS time to live down to about 5 minutes. Step two, bring up your site so that it exists on both IP addresses. Step three, point from the old IP address to the new IP address. Step four, wait about 5 minutes, because that will let all those DNS cash is flush. Worst case, you want to be really paranoid, wait 24 hours, in case there's a few people that cache things and aren't really well behaved. As soon as you see Googlebot fetching things from the new IP address, you're basically safe. At that point, feel free to take down the old site. So that's roughly how to move to a new IP address. Moving to a new domain is a little trickier, right? Because there's a lot of stuff where you want to move here, you want to move to a new site, and you want to be as safe as possible. So typically what we recommend is doing what's called a permanent redirect. Permanent is encoded in whenever you try to fetch the web page, you return an HTTP status code. So for example, if you returned a web page totally fine, it would be called a 200. Whenever you try to fetch a page and you can't find it, that's a 404, and the web server says 404. Whenever you try to fetch a page and it's moved, it can be a 301 or a 302. 301 means a permanent redirect. 302 means a temporary redirect. So you want to have a 301, a permanent redirect, from the old site to the new site. And Google normally handles that completely fine. Right? But this is your site. This is your baby. You do not want to lose search traffic. So you want to be really safe. You want to be really cautious. So here's the extra step. Don't just move the entire domain from the old domain to the new domain. Start out and move a subdirectory or subdomain, some small part of your site. Move that first. Like if you've got a forum, move one part of your forum. Move that over to the new domain and make sure that the rankings for that one part of your site don't crash. Sometimes it takes a week or so for things to sort of equalize out because we have to crawl that page, see that it's moved. So if you move a part of your site first and it goes fine, then you know that you're pretty safe. So instead of doing one huge move, if you can break it down into smaller chunks and start out by moving a small part of your site first, you know that you'll be golden. The other thing is a lot of people worry about, what if I have a 301 from every single page on my old site to every single page on my new site? That's totally fine. In fact, it's really good if you've got five different pages on this site to 301 them to the exact five different pages on the new site. So don't just go straight to the root page. Go, you know, from page1.html to page1.html. We don't have any limits at all on how many 301 redirects you can have on the old site. So that should be totally good. One last tip, because this was a really weird one. Anybody know what domain name, let's play a quiz. What is .cx? Anybody know what the TLD for .cx is? Yeah, not a lot of spammers in this audience. I like it. I think that's like Christmas Islands or something. You know, there's all these crazy TLDs. Anybody know what .yu is? I think it's Yugoslavia, which I think .yu is going away, right? In September 2009, there will be no more .yu domains, which really sucks. How do you put a 301 on your site if it doesn't exist anymore, right? Somebody recently asked that. So here's the tip that I would give for that. Go to Webmaster Tools, google.com/webmasters, verify your site, prove that you own your site. It's a pretty simple process. And then you can see pretty much an exhaustive list of all the backlinks that Google knows about to your site. So you can take those backlinks and you can say, oh, that's a really important one. I need to email her and ask her to update her link to my new site. Right? So you don't have to email everybody that backlinks to your old site. But if there's, you know, if Time.com, if New York Times, if CNN.com links to your old site, at least try to contact them and say, hey, I've moved to a new site. Why don't you shift it over here? So you can at least cherry pick amongst your backlinks and try to get the important ones moved over directly to the new site.
Excellent. Let's go ahead with some of the questions from Google Moderator. That first one at the top is something we talked about in several sessions yesterday.
Yep.
Does click-through or behavioral metrics on SERPs affect ranking? Theory being, we talked a lot about bounce rates and you visit a page on a SERP, you click off to a site, you have some experience on that site. Do you directly go back to Google and perform another search or click on another result, or do you stay on that site? Somehow that interaction, that quote bounce rate or time on site time is being used to affect Google rankings. True or not true?
So it's really funny because they do use things like bounce rate in ads, but like three or four pub cons ago, right after we bought Google Analytics, somebody said, do you promise never to use Google Analytics? And I made a promise at that time. I said, I promise my team will never go and get data from Google Analytics. And we never have. So the web spam team absolutely does not use it. People have asked about toolbar, click-through, bounce rate, all that sort of stuff. And I'm not going to take any signal off the table. I'm not going to say we might not use it. Like there was a question about SearchWiki that I didn't post on there. It was like, well, Google, can you say Google will never use SearchWiki votes? And I was like, well, I'm not going to promise that. But here's why it might be problematic. It's a really noisy signal. Like, I think Microsoft has actually confirmed that they do use click-through on search results. And I was on the panel, and the guy from Microsoft was right next to me, and you could hear the entire audience go, you know, like, a couple people opened up their laptops and sort of cracked their knuckles a little bit, you know, and sort of doing searches on a Microsoft and click. I'm like, dude, what? That's not cool, you know? And it was really funny because they've said that they use click-through, and so I genuinely believe that they get hit by a lot of spam bots. Noisy stuff like toolbar and behavioral metrics, if you use that, would be really, really spam. So I personally am a pretty big skeptic of stuff like, you know, just raw click-through, behavioral metrics, usage data, all that sort of stuff. I'm not going to take it off the table. I'm not going to say we will never use it, but, you know, you can imagine there are some creative people in this room, a few that are wearing black hats, and if they thought, oh, it'll help me to go and click on my result every day, they would totally do it. So it's a very appealing idea, but in practice, you really have to worry about spam.
Well, you have so many data sources coming in. You got toolbars, you got services, you got Google Analytics, you got AdSense, you have AdWords, you have all the on-site stuff, off-site stuff, you got ISP stuff coming in. What's the weirdest thing you've heard? What's the biggest misconception like this, like bounce rates, you know, that you hear that you just absolutely won't do?
It's kind of the whole thing. So it's the same thing about referrers. It's like everybody assumes, oh, there's this master plan, you know, when it's really one team at Google who's trying to make things really fast. Like, everybody assumes there's this master data warehouse at Google, and all the data comes in, and all gets mixed together into one global profile of Brett, and you know when he gets up in the morning, and he does his cup of coffee, and he's doing some unusual searches this morning, right? And it's really not that way. Like, just like any company, you typically have silos. And so I don't think I've talked to an ads person in a while, right? And so somebody sends me an email, and they're like, oh, can you help me with this ads problem? And I'm like, I don't even know who to talk to, right? You would do better just going through the front door. I don't even know any product managers over there. So everybody assumes, oh, yeah, there's this massive silo, and everything just goes into the master database, and it's really not that way at all. You know, web spam, search quality, we've got our stuff that we care about, and the vast majority of time, that's links, that's PageRank, things like that, and not, you know, thinking about whether you use Google Analytics. We just don't.
Okay, great. If you were an SEO, what would you have done for link building a year ago?
Yeah.
You kind of answered that one earlier. But
I'll give a real quick one, which is I still think there's a ton of room for services, right? I didn't want to come across as too salesy. Hey, write plugins for Google Friend Connect API. I do think there's a huge opportunity to do that, but there's so much room for services that do cool things with Twitter. There's so many ways to get good links. So in fact, I have a couple slides I could show. My appendix. White hat link bait. And you really can't read you can read the URL a little bit. So there was a site called Dolores Labs, and they specialize in using Mechanical Turk from Amazon in some pretty cool ways. So what they did, okay, who here has a Twitter account? Oh my god. PubCon is going to be so well documented on Twitter. Okay, so they took the top 200 people on Twitter, and they said, okay, random people. They said, here is the Twitter stream for Barack Obama. Give me one word about Barack Obama. And they sent that out to five people. So they got five words about Barack Obama. President, winner, spam, Democrat, bore. Right? This is a random cross-section of people. Some of them are outside the United States. Guy Kawasaki, incomprehensible, linker, delightful. Reliable, right? So these are not people who are trying to be polite. And in fact, they included me. So the very first word to describe me on Twitter, snore. Yeah, all right, thanks a lot, Mechanical Turk. Programmer, knowledgeable, cute, yay! Now, if you noticed, I have a picture of my cat on my profile. So I think when they say cute, they're like, yeah, pretty cute cat, you know. So this is pretty interesting. And they didn't just display it this way. They also made a graph, right? So Gary Vee, you know, you can mouse over and you can see he's pedestrian, active, simplistic, handsome, football. You can see me up towards the top. It's really great. I'm like one of the smarter people. I'm almost as smart as Kevin Rose. I'm really not entertaining at all. I'm like really in the lower like 20% as far as entertaining because I'm way over in this direction. This is like catnip for Twitterers, right? Right? The top 200 Twitterers, if you got a message that said, hey, 5 random people think you are a snorer, a programmer, knowledgeable, and cute. How could you not link to that or write a blog post about that, right? So these guys have targeted 200 incredibly influential people to say Al Gore is both smart and entertaining, Borat is neither smart nor entertaining, right? These guys got a lot of links, a ton of links. How much do you think they spent? How much money do you think they spent? $25, right? So links can be had. It's all about creativity, right? Now, if you just repeat this experiment, oh, I'm going to do it for the top 250 Twitterers, you probably won't get as many links. But if you're the first person to come up with a creative idea, you absolutely can get a ton of links as a result. So I would probably be coming up with some service, some product that a lot of people would like and want to talk about. Good question.
Let's go to that second one there. What would you do to optimize your own site?
As soon as they start saying, what are the 7 things that you would do? I'm like, okay, I'm not going to be able to remember that on stage. So a website is a lot like a house. It has an architecture. You want the foundation to be strong. So I would say the first one would be your URL structure, your site architecture, right? If you're using something like WordPress or Drupal or Joomla, a lot of that is built in for you. You don't have to worry about it. But think about DMOS. They have a very clean structure, very nice fan out. It's a very tree-like structure. You know, 13 top-level categories, each top-level category goes down. If you have a URL structure where everybody's linking crazy around and you get confused, you're not going to have visitors like it quite as much. So first off, I would say URL structure. Second, think about titles. Now, this question was all about on-page, so I'm not going to talk about backlinks at all. Get good titles. Get good titles in not just, get good keywords not just in your title, but also in your URL. So, URL structure, titles, keywords in the URL and the content. If you want a very simple tip, go to the Google AdWords keyword tracker thingy, you know, search for keyword tool. Suppose I'm going to do a blog post about, give me a topic, any topic.
Subdomain.
Cats. Totally. So, if you are, suppose you have the Furminator, right? It's this awesome comb that really strips the undercoat of fur, like my cat Emmy loves it. If you're the Furminator and you're writing the copy for that, you'd be surprised how many people say, this is a feline hair comb, right? How many people are going to type in feline? Not a lot. They're going to type in cat, right? They're going to type in cat or cats. So you want to use both variants. You want to use both ways of spelling. They're going to do weird slang. Right? So you might look up, what are the top cat names? Tiger, you know, all these sorts of things. So if you go to the Google keyword tool and you type in comb, hair, cat, things like this, you will get all sorts of synonyms that you did not think of, but real users are going to type. Now, does that mean that you write your whole post about the feline hair comb and then down at the bottom you say cat, cats, cat combs, cat hair combs, cat combing for hair, you know, all this stuff? No, you don't need to do it that way. You've got a list of 4 or 5, how many phrases, you incorporate that into your copy naturally, right? You end up with one page that mentions, yeah, cat and cats and all this sort of stuff in a completely natural way. Quick tip, if you go to my blog and search for something like Firefox printing in Linux, you'll notice that the title of my posts are different than the URL of my posts, because those are two different places you can put keywords, right? And you can totally say, like, default printer in Firefox for the URL, and then how to print in Firefox in the title. So, I'm up to like 4. 2 last ones. I would check your server logs. You are already ranking for a ton of terms that you do not expect to be ranking for, right? And so if you see that you're on page 2 for Furminator, maybe if you add the, you know, one more article about Furminator, cross-link them a little bit or something, you might be on page 1 for Furminator, which is, again, this cat fur kind of thing. So, look at the stuff that you're really, really close on. You're already on page 2 and figure out how you can rank on page 1. And then the last tip, Brett had a really good guide called like the A to Z guide, the 26 things on how to promote your site. And the one that always sticks into my head is try to add like a page of content a day. Just like add an article a day, right? I can look at my analytics and I can tell when I'm posting a lot. Because when I'm doing a post every day, people are like, oh yeah, Matt's posting again. Woo, let's go check, see what's up. Oh, cool. And when I leave it for a week and don't post, people just stop coming. So you would be amazed how much evergreen content, new things coming out every single day makes people come back. Think about Webmaster World. You've always got new headlines scrolling down. And so a few hours later, there will be a new topic to talk about. So that's what I would say, like titles, URLs, keywords naturally in the content, a page of content every day, and check your server logs.
Okay. What's your favorite there? We got time for one more up there, and then we'll do some of them.
Does Google have a fast index?
FreshBot.
Yes, we do. We absolutely do. Update Fritz in 2003 was the switch from monthly to daily. We now can go much, much faster than daily. And since that was a fast question, let me just say, welcome to TwitterCon. Woohoo! Go Twitter! Does Google give people with more followers in Twitter more page rank? No, we don't. You know, people ask this about EDUs and govs and Twitter. They say, oh, surely you give Twitter URLs a boost. How can you not? We don't. If you get a lot of page rank to your Twitter page or your Twitter profile, then we're likely to show that in the search results. But we don't say, oh, you know, guy has got 20,000 followers in Twitter, therefore give him a little extra page rank or anything like that. We just let the links flow out naturally the way that they're going to flow out.
Okay, got time.
You know, I've got a JavaScript mouse over menu, and I don't see any text unless I click or I mouse over a little part of the screen. Is that going to get me tagged as hidden text or something like that? Can we handle the vast majority of those idioms completely well? I wouldn't go custom on the code. I would go with something that's pretty standard, like look at what other sites do. Let me give you an example. This is what not to do. This is a spammer. Can anyone guess what this is doing? C-string new resource extra noted. Okay, and then I C-display equals 4 substrings of C-string, and then I set display to C-display. Let me make it just a little bit easier. The 4 characters that are used from that string are those. Total spam trick. This guy is taking the characters N-O-N-E out of the string and then saying display equals none. Smart.